This Friday night, freshman Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky will speak before a national television audience at the State Republican Party's Lincoln Dinner here in Iowa. This hour, we hear Rand Paul's views on a number of issues. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, my conversation with Rand Paul, recorded earlier today. We'll ask about his presidential aspirations, get his views on the state of the GOP, the differences between his politics and that of his father, Ron Paul, also immigration and drones. Then, our analyst, Bruce Gronbeck, will give us his take on Rand Paul's rhetorical style and his appeal. Coming up this hour, first this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This Friday night, freshman Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky will speak before a national television audience at the State Republican Party's Lincoln Dinner here in Iowa. Rand Paul was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People in the World for 2013. The Lincoln Dinner is an event often viewed as a warm-up act for future campaigns for the Iowa caucuses and the presidency. Previous headliners for the Iowa GOP Lincoln Day Dinner have included former New York City Mayor and presidential candidate Rudy Giuliani, also Governor Mitt Romney. With his visit to Iowa this week and his address at Friday's Lincoln Dinner, Senator Rand Paul agreed to a phone conversation with me, and to accommodate his schedule, we spoke earlier today. Senator Paul, welcome to our program.
Glad to be with you.
We here in Iowa are our nation's crossroads for many political leaders. What message do you want to deliver this week that's different from what Iowans have heard from other leading Republican figures who have visited our state?
Well, you know, I think what the Republican Party needs to grow is we need to understand that we haven't been doing very well in national elections. Iowa, which at times has been a Republican state, has been going to the Democrat Party in presidential elections. And so is most of New England, so is most of the West Coast. And I think part of the problem is we need to do more outreach and have a more diverse party. We need to talk to African Americans. We need to talk to Hispanics. We need to have a public philosophy that engages all folks from all walks of life, whether you're working class or in business, and says that, you know what, ours is the party of opportunity and ours is the party of economic growth. And I think if we did that, I think we can get new people to join our party.
So you see it primarily or exclusively as a problem of outreach and not as adjusting policies to attract more of the people you just named.
Well, see, it sort of depends. I've always been someone who believes in immigration reform. I think our immigration system is broken, and I think that is part of what I think Hispanics, many Hispanics and Latinos want to hear is that Republicans are open to finding some solutions. I don't want to send 11 million people home. I want to find a place for those who want to work in our country and who want to experience the American dream. That being said, there's still a lot of details that need to be worked out on getting the bill to work and function. But I think just by saying that, people's ears will open, will perk up and say, you know what, maybe Republicans don't all want to deport people with brown skin. Maybe people in the Republican Party are open and willing to engage on this subject. And I think then the Latino community will then say, well, you know what, we also kind of agree with Republicans on a lot of other issues.
Well, to be more specific on the issue of immigration and to reference, I think, a Tuesday speech you gave before the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in Washington, D.C., and this is paraphrasing, and correct me if this is not accurate. You say immigration reform, but secure the border first. Trust but verify. The border has to be secured, then reform begins. And my question then, if that's a correct paraphrase, if everyone waits to be satisfied that the border is secure before immigration reform happens, will it ever happen?
Well, the thing that happened in 1986 is we did document a lot of the undocumented workers, and they promised border security, but many conservatives were upset that the border security never came. I think there's a way to ensure within the bill that border security does come. So my amendment, Trust But Verify, what it does is you begin documenting the undocumented. There's 11 million. It's going to take several years to do it. The documentation process, though, can be interrupted by a vote of Congress, and we have these votes each year for about 5 years on whether the border is becoming more secure. It will force them to do what they need to do. The current bill says they have to have a plan to build the fence that we authorized 10 years ago. And myself and other senators yesterday in the committee said, what? The bill's going to say you have to have a plan? You don't have a plan, and you were authorized to do this 10 years ago, and there's still no plan? That's how ridiculous it is. If they don't get a plan, then a commission's set up. If the commission doesn't do anything, they write a report. This is the problem with legislation up here. We need to put teeth into it, and there's an easy way to do this. Tell them to build 100 miles of fence each year. You know, tell them to complete what we authorized 10 years ago and just make it part of the bill. Don't ask them to do it. Just simply tell them to do it. And at the same time, we can begin finding a place for those in our country who have come to our country and who want to work. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's definitely a reasonable possibility it could all be done at one time. Not that we wait, but that we go ahead and do it all at one time.
The Iowa caucuses won't be until 2016. Still a lot of speculation already about who will be contenders for the presidential nominations in both parties. Senator Paul, how close are you to throwing your hat into the ring for the White House in 2016?
You know, we're considering it and won't make a decision for about a year. I am traveling to a lot of states that just coincidentally have early primaries. But part of that is to try to grow the Republican Party as well, and to let Republican Party know that we need to show up at Latino conferences and conclaves, African American. We need to talk about how school choice is the way to get education better for all of our community, particularly those who have been deprived of a good education. So I think there's all kinds of things we need to do that can help us as a party grow, and whether or not that evolves into a presidential campaign is probably a year or so down the road.
Mm-hmm. The GOP in Iowa and across the country has several different faces, the different camps, and as you talk about how the GOP has to change, we have to sort of look at what the GOP is made up of today: evangelicals, libertarians, Tea Partiers, mainstream Republicans. Do you feel that these factions within the GOP are sufficiently unified going in, or how do they have to unify if not?
Well, see, I think the one thing that we could learn from the Democrats is the Democrats probably have 1,000 different special interest groups who don't always get along with each other, but they stay under the tent of the Democrat Party. That's what Republicans need to do, is when we create a big tent, we need to understand we will not agree on every issue, and that doesn't mean we give up on what we believe in. It just means that we acknowledge there'll be some people in the party who don't agree on every social issue, and maybe what unifies the party as a whole is we believe in small government, less taxation, less regulation, and that there will be room for some disagreement on some other issues.
So the GOP defined as less emphasis on social issues like same-sex marriage or abortion.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying I'm giving a mandate that that's what it is. I'm just saying that to be a bigger party, we need to acknowledge that there will be people with different opinions on that. And so I think that part of that is saying, yes, we are who we are. You know, I'm pro-life. I believe in traditional marriage, but I don't have to beat you up about it, and that you might have a different opinion and still be a fiscal conservative and say, well, gosh, my home is much closer to the Republican Party. I just disagree with Rand Paul on these issues, but he's a reasonable fellow and he's not beating me up about it, so I think I can be in the same party as him.
Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, my guest for this part of River to River. Senator, Your Senate colleague, Iowa Senator Tom Harkin, announced his retirement a few months back. The Democrats' presumed nominee for that open seat in 2014 is Congressman Bruce Braley, who has a good start already raising money for his campaign war chest. Now, the Iowa GOP is in a different situation. All of the first-tier Republican candidates have weighed the challenge and said, no thank you. Representatives Steve King and Tom Latham, Bill Northey, Governor Terry Branstad, also Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds. Why can't the GOP in Iowa field a candidate?
You know, I didn't realize all of those people had said no, so when I get to Iowa, I'm going to have to ask them that question. I'm going to have to say, come on, guys, you got to field a candidate, because I see Iowa as one of these battleground states. I think President Obama won it in 2008 and 2012, But I think there have been previous history. I mean, our Republican governor there has had, what, 3 or 4 terms?
Yes.
And so you have a longstanding Republican governor. You control one or both houses. And so, I mean—
Yes, control of the House and not in the Senate. Yes, Senate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think there is a strong Republican presence there. And I see no reason why a Republican can't win that Senate race. But I think Iowa is like other states where we've been losing ground in the sense that maybe just the old cookie-cutter model of who we've been running isn't it. Maybe a businessman or woman, maybe a Hispanic Republican, maybe a black Republican. You know, I know there's not a large African-American population, but maybe we need to think outside the box, or maybe someone who's a little more libertarian in the sense that it's someone who believes maybe in a less aggressive foreign policy, or maybe we shouldn't lock up everybody and throw away the key for nonviolent crime. So I think there is room for new ideas and also ways to grow the party. But maybe the same old's not what we need. Maybe we do need a new face.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how familiar you are with the GOP in Iowa. Do you have a short list of names? Can you put any names to those descriptions?
I'm afraid I'm not the one to ask because I don't have a short list or the ability to do that. But that will come up, I'm sure, when we are meeting with a bunch of Republicans. And definitely I will encourage them that we need to be competitive and really think about winning a state like Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Now, keeping on the topic of the Senate, what would it mean for the country if the GOP regained a majority in the Senate in 2014? And then presumably your Kentucky colleague, Senior Senator Mitch McConnell, now minority leader, would be then the majority leader. What would it mean for the country if that happened?
The biggest thing we're struggling right now with is anemic economic growth or virtually no economic growth. We are actually registering more people as disabled some months than we're registering to work, and that's a real problem. And I think people should look back to history when we had economic growth. Some of the largest economic growth we've ever gotten is when we cut taxes. And I know the president ran on the opposite platform, but really when Reagan cut taxes dramatically, we actually had growth rates of 7, 5, 4. You know, we had significant growth rates. Well, I think in one period of time, there was 8 million jobs created under Reagan. If we had a growth rate like that again, it would be equivalent to about 12 million jobs in today's world. But people have to decide, and voters have to decide, is President Obama right? We need to send more money to Washington. Or are the Republicans right? We need to leave more money in Iowa. And I think it's a no-brainer. Leave more money in Iowa. Leave more money in Kentucky. Leave more money in the hands of businessmen and women. And you'll see an economic boom like you've never seen. But we've run Republicans often who just are for something tepid like revenue neutral tax reform. And I say, that's ridiculous. I don't care if you pay more and I pay less or vice versa. I want everybody to pay less and more of it to remain in Iowa chasing goods and having people go into restaurants and creating new jobs. And that really means you got to reduce what goes to Washington and leave more of it at home.
You can't say that you called it anemic. You can't put it in a little more optimistic tone. We have been ticking down the unemployment rate now down to 7.5%. That's positive.
Economic growth, I think, has averaged under 1% in the last 4 years. That is very, very anemic. Fourth quarter, we contracted. We had a little better growth this last quarter, but it's still tepid, and I would say that there's a chance, and there are many people who are saying we could have a correction within a correction. The main reason is we haven't freed up the economy. We've added many more burdens to the economy. We just raised taxes $600 billion. That doesn't help the economy. That's a punishment to the economy. That's $600 billion less in job creation. So really that is what we face. And my opinion is unabashedly leave more money in the economy, in the private economy. And it's the only known economic stimulus ever to work is when you leave more money in the hands of those who earn it.
Senator Rand Paul, your father, Congressman Ron Paul, is well known here in Iowa. He's had significant support and passion from many Iowans, as you know, I'm sure, in the past two presidential campaigns. So I'm imagining many of our listeners are saying, well, where does Ron Paul and his son Rand, where is the daylight between their views? Can you name an issue on which you don't see eye to eye with your father?
You know, I think it's more instructive for me to present who I am and what I'm doing. I've been in the Senate 2 years, and I think people have learned a lot about what I stand for. The recent filibuster, I think, made well known my stand on civil liberties, on the right to trial by jury, balanced budget. So there's similarities. And I just don't think it's instructive to go through item by item through thousands of issues and try to find differences. I would say I'm my own person and have developed my record, and people are going to get a chance to hear from me in Iowa on Friday. And so, but I think that's the best way to go. And
well, I'm not asking for an item by item list. I guess I'm asking for one issue, to find out one issue where there is daylight between your views and your father's.
Yeah, I don't know that I have one that I can list or I'm really eager to go through any kind of litany of differences. But what I would say is that I believe in small, limited constitutional government. I believe in the rights of the individuals, the rights of minorities to be protected from the tyranny of the state. And so I think if people want to look through and find out who I am or want to know more about it, you know, I'm going to be in Cedar Rapids coming up, and I think that's the best way to address it. And it's a question that we've come up with before. You're not the first to ask it, but I just don't think it's instructive or something that I want to engage in.
Mm-hmm. You've gained a high profile or a higher profile recently with it. The 13-hour filibuster early in March on the confirmation of John Brennan to be CIA director. You were asking for more clarity from the administration about the use of drones in a civilian setting. Since that time, in the opinion of many analysts, you've muddied the waters since, and I wanted to give you a chance to clarify for our listeners how should drones be used domestically?
But what I would say is that the filibuster was about the idea of targeted assassination. And people who said, oh, this is about just one form of technology, didn't quite grasp this. What I was arguing against is that any government can target for assassination or killing anyone not involved in combat, eating in a cafe, at home with their family, walking on a street, but not engaged in combat. Whether it's a drone or a sniper or a spear isn't so as important as the concept that if you're not engaged in combat, that it's not appropriate to use deadly force against you. It may be appropriate to arrest you, make a trial, you get a lawyer, you get a jury trial. That's what this was about, much more than the technology. And so I think some people misunderstood what it was about. And the people who wanted to muddy the water on this didn't listen to the 13 hours of debate or even a little bit of the debate, because within the debate I used the same example and the same exact words that people seemed to think was a change of opinion. But my opinion is still consistent. We shouldn't use armed drones against citizens, and it should be something that is profound and brings both parties together, Republican and Democrats, that the right to trial by jury is something we really, really should prize and not let go.
Senator Rand Paul, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Conversation I had with Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky earlier today, recorded earlier today to accommodate the senator's schedule. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, what did you hear from my conversation with Rand Paul that perked up your ears, to use his phrase? In the appealing category or the unappealing category? We talked about several things you heard there. 1-866-780-9100. Did you support Rand Paul's father in 2008, in 2012, Ron Paul? Would you back Rand Paul for president if he does decide to be a candidate in 2016? So the things we'll be kicking around in the next half hour. 1-866-780-9100. You can write us an email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can also post a message on our Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. Well, as mentioned, this Friday night, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky will speak before a national television audience at the state Republican Party's Lincoln Dinner here in Iowa. Iowa Public Radio's Sarah McCammon will be covering that event for Iowa Public Radio, and she joins me now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Ben.
Tell us a little bit more. Fill us in about why he's coming, why he's the choice of the Iowa GOP this time around.
Well, okay, this is, of course, an annual fundraiser for the party, and party leaders kind of seem to be downplaying the choice a little bit. I spoke earlier today with Republican Party of Iowa Executive Director Steve Bierfeld, and, you know, he said the party tries to bring in a variety of speakers, and Senator Rand Paul is one of them. He noticed that there has been a lot of energy and excitement recently surrounding Rand Paul because of that dramatic filibuster that we talked about before the U.S. Senate on the issue of drones. I asked if it's fair to say that this dinner is often part of the early vetting process leading up to the presidential caucuses. And the director of the GOP said, well, you know, it's a spring fundraiser.
Mm-hmm. We heard he is considering the run for the White House in 2016. He was very upfront about that, though the decision about that will be coming in about a year. But I see polls showing him really one of the favorites, if not the leader.
Right, and as he told you, Ben, he is thinking about it, but he hasn't made a decision. It is still very early. Many of us feel like we're still just recovering from 2012, so there's a lot of time left between now and 2016. But there is a lot of speculation in that direction, and Senator Paul seems to be positioning himself as a leading conservative voice. That drone filibuster, of course, and back in January, you may recall when Secretary of State Hillary Clinton testified on Capitol Hill about the terrorist attack on Benghazi, Senator Paul got a lot of attention for saying, had I been president at the time, he would have fired Clinton. So that tells you he's at least thinking about what he would do in that office. And, mm-hmm. of course, coming to Iowa, this first-in-the-nation caucus state, always tends to fuel that speculation.
Right. And it's interesting, in the conversation that I had earlier today with him that we just heard, he didn't want to name one issue where he and his father didn't see eye to eye. In another interview I saw, he quoted and he said, it doesn't make for great Thanksgiving conversation if I'm always either separating myself from my father or commending my father. But that is a question on Iowans' minds, on the nation's minds, if they would consider him as a presidential candidate. So remind us, who are Ron Paul supporters? And we saw passionate supporters, lots of them in Iowa, the last two presidential rounds.
Yeah, they have a reputation for being young and energetic, and there's a lot of truth to that. You know, I covered the Ron Paul movement quite a bit last year, and you go to these rallies and events, and you do meet a lot of young people, also, you know, middle-aged people and a lot of young families. Quite a few homeschooling families seem to be avid Ron Paul supporters. And, you know, in Iowa, the Ron Paul movement has been very influential in the GOP. You know, even after it became clear that Ron Paul would not be the nominee last year, supporters of what they call the Liberty Movement started organizing around local races and working to gain control of the party, and very successfully in many cases. There are a lot of people in positions of leadership at the GOP with ties to Ron Paul, including the executive director and the party chairman. And many of our listeners may remember that the overwhelming majority of Iowa delegates to the national GOP convention last year were Ron Paul delegates. So they have a lot of clout. And I should mention the small but active group of Liberty Movement supporters is still organizing around local candidates and doing grassroots political training. So, you know, they haven't gone away.
And I guess so the real question is, will they transfer to support the son, Rand Paul? That's an open question. I don't know if you can give us any guidance there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it of course, remains to be seen, and some certainly will. I spoke with Adil Khan, a young volunteer director for the Liberty Iowa PAC, who was very active in the Ron Paul campaign. And, you know, he said some supporters will just automatically roll over from Ron Paul to Rand Paul, but not all of them. And he did say of Senator Paul, he's not Ron.
And very quickly before we have to go, Sarah, how much does he connect with the part of the party, the Iowa evangelicals, that faction of the party?
Well, I think he has some appeal, you know, especially some of these libertarian-minded folks, maybe some of these homeschooling groups who really kind of want the government to be hands-off and really value independence. But, you know, I think there's definitely some space there. Last month on the Christian Broadcasting Network, Senator Paul commented that some evangelicals are, as he put it, too eager for war. We heard him a moment ago telling you that he is, you know, pro-life and for traditional marriage. But he said, you know, I don't have to beat you up about it. So
right.
He seems to be reaching out to fiscal conservatives, but not necessarily social conservatives, which could be a problem maybe for ideological purists. I guess we'll see.
Okay. Thank you so much, Iowa Public Radio, Sarah McCammon. We'll look forward to your coverage of that event, the Rand Paul Lincoln Dinner Address. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Ben.
And when we come back, we'll continue with Politics Wednesday here. We want to hear what you thought of that conversation with Rand Paul. Did you support Ron Paul in 2008 or 2012? Will you support him if he runs for president? What did you like that you heard or that you didn't hear? Bruce Gronbeck will be joining us from the University of Iowa. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, Marshalltown native and veteran Hollywood actor Toby Huss. Conversation with him. Toby Huss has a significant role in the new movie 42. Perhaps you've seen it, about the life of Jackie Robinson, the baseball great. So tomorrow's topic, look at his role and also Racism and Baseball in the 1940s, that movie with Harrison Ford and Marshalltown native Toby Huss. Politics Wednesday on the program today. This Friday night, freshman Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky speaking before a national television audience at the state Republican Party's Lincoln Dinner here in Iowa. Rand Paul named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world for 2013. The Lincoln Dinner, an event often viewed as a warm-up act for future campaigns for the Iowa caucuses and the presidency. We had a conversation with him in the first part of that program. We asked you to join us with your feedback. What did you think of what Senator Paul had to say? And we'll get to that in just a moment after I introduce our guest for this second half hour. Bruce Gronbach is with us, one of our regular crew on Politics Wednesday. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there. Good to be back in Iowa, at least by voice.
All right. Emeritus Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Iowa. Bruce, you've made your life's work studying, among other things, political communication, messaging in the political arena. And we're going to get your thoughts on Rand Paul as a politician and also in relation to his father. But first, we want to go to the phones because we did ask for some feedback. Let's go to Patrick.
Excellent.
Patrick, who phoned in from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Patrick.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm a former Republican, current independent, disenfranchised from both parties. Even though he's a Republican, he speaks a lot of sense regarding, I feel, foreign policy, a non-interventionist, non-imperialistic approach to foreign policy and addressing the military-industrial complex, which is a disaster, as well as his thoughts on civil liberties. He came out strong on the drone subject. He's standing up for the rights of people at a very fundamental level, I believe, closer to a libertarian than a Republican position. Today's Republicans are totally lost in at least my view, and I think he represents a strong thread of common sense addressing some of the greatest pain the country faces, just out-of-control military spending, continued propaganda on the terrorist wars, enormously fresh voice in these key areas.
Patrick, thank you very much. Patrick from joining us from Cedar Rapids. Bruce, your reaction. You were on the line listening to that conversation I had with Rand Paul.
I think Patrick's on to something. That those are some of the kinds of appeals that will, I think, attract, and he's right, attract a lot of independents to at least start following them and take them seriously. I think what we heard in your interview is that strong sense of earnestness about those kinds of constitutional issues that Patrick was bringing up. And it's that sense of sincerity, the things that he's worked for. I think that came through in his vice presidential campaign. He didn't back down a lot from a lot of things, and that was repeated here. I think we have another E word probably is eagerness. He's made it pretty clear that if he's getting positive signs over the next years, that is by moving up in the poll numbers and starting to get support by leaders in particular states. And you need that if you're going to organize those states for primaries and caucuses, that he will be making a run. He's one of those. He's a young person, so he's making an early leap, trying to jump out ahead, it's fun to watch him do that.
Mm-hmm. We're asking for a reaction to Rand Paul's conversation from the last half hour. Let's go to Bruce. Let's listen to what Mohammed has to say. Mohammed joining us from Des Moines. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I used to be a former Democrat right up until Mr. Obama took office. And then I kind of left the Democrats and was hesitant on where I wanted to go. But after listening to Rand Paul, I'm not too big in foreign policies, and I think there's too many variables out there. I just honestly don't understand foreign policy at all. But I'm more concerned with domestic policies, and I'm really happy that he's pushing for small government. And I really think that's important, and I think that should be the emphasis that he pushes for. Personally, for me, like I said, that's what I think is most important. Small government, stop trying to take control of all our businesses, stop trying to dictate exactly how we live our lives. And like him, I'm...
Mohammed, are you still there, Mohammed?
Yeah, sorry. We just had... I think I lost some connection.
No, you're still on. Go ahead. Be brief, please. We want to move on.
Yeah, I'll end real quick. I want to say that Though I may disagree with him, I'm pro-choice instead of pro-life, and I also support gay marriage. Though morally, they may be right or wrong, but I don't think that's anyone else's decision. But I do like that he left it up to the people to make that decision and didn't say that you have to support gay, you know, you have to support traditional marriage to support him, for example. Thank you very much.
Mohammed from Des Moines, thank you very much for calling 1-866-780-9100. Bruce Gronbeck, let's compare the two, because that's on a lot of people's minds. Ron Paul, the father, congressman from Texas, with a lot of support here in Iowa over at least a couple of presidential election cycles in the Iowa caucuses,
right.
Comparing to Rand Paul. Here is Ron Paul, the father, speaking to CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, in February of 2013, talking about how his message about monetary policy resonates with younger audiences.
On the universities where I get large crowds, we get large number of young people coming out interested in the money issue. We had over 4,000 show up the other night at the University of Minnesota. The issue of money is one of the most interesting subjects for these young people, because when I talk about the monetizing of debt, the printing of money, the endless devaluation of our currency and how important it is, it gets one of the loudest applauses because young people understand that money is a very important issue. They understand that the Constitution is explicit. The Constitution says no emitting bills of credit, no paper money, only gold and silver can be legal tender. And today we allow big government to grow, whether it's on the conservative side or the liberal side. If they want something, they usually have a compromise, spend it on both, and then they resort to printing money. And that is where our trouble's coming from. And that is the crisis we're facing. All great nations and great empires, and for fiscal, financial reasons. That's how the Soviet system was defeated. We didn't have to invade them. We didn't have to fight them. Their system collapsed. And that is what's happening today. The middle class is getting wiped out. The middle class is getting poorer endlessly because they can't keep up with the cost of living. And the solution isn't printing more money and spending more money and allowing the Federal Reserve to pretend they can solve the problem. The answer is found in fiscal conservatism. Live within our means is what we have to do.
Ron Paul speaking to CPAC. That was in February of 2012. I misspoke, not 2013. Let's, Bruce, compare that. I want to have you comment after we have a dose of Rand Paul speaking to that same conference, CPAC, in March of this year, 2013, hot on the heels of his Senate filibuster on the domestic use of drones. Here he is.
Now, I was told I got 10 measly minutes. But just in case, I bought 13 hours worth of information. I also came with a message for the president, a message that is loud and clear, a message that doesn't mince words. That's not exactly what I was thinking. However, I think he may have distilled my 13-hour speech into three words. The message for the president is that no one person gets to decide the law. No one person gets to decide your guilt or innocence. My question to the president was about more than just killing Americans on American soil. My question was about whether presidential power has limits. Lincoln put it well when he wrote, "Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man, give him power." President Obama, who seemed once upon a time to respect civil liberties, has become the president who signed a law allowing for indefinite detention of an American citizen. Indeed, a law that allows an American citizen to be sent to Guantanamo Bay without a trial. Now, President Obama defends his signing of this bill by stating that he has no intention of detaining an American citizen without a trial. Likewise, he defended possible targeted drone strikes on Americans by indicating that he had no intention of doing so. Well, my 13-hour filibuster was a message to the president. Good intentions are not enough.
Senator Rand Paul speaking to CPAC in March of this year. Bruce Gronbeck, when we hear those back-to-back, Father, Ron Paul, and Rand Paul there in extended clips, certainly hear similarities. You study political rhetoric. What do you hear?
Well, because you got two different kinds of clips, I think they give you two different issues to make the comparison. You could tell in Dad's speech that he's very interested in the institutional aspects of money, in monetary policy, and money, how it flows through an economy, and the government's role in controlling that flow. Whereas the son, as you've heard him a lot during the campaign, is much more interested in the spending of money. And we got that in your interview with him, that we got to send money back to be spent by citizens in Iowa and not by Congress in Washington. So they have a different kind of approach to that matter of money. Dad controlling the institutions, the son controlling the spending. They both also, from Rand Paul's point of view, in what we just heard, are interested in civil liberties, but notice that Rand Paul is very interested in the constitutional aspects of those, whereas Dad is a good libertarian, a strong emphasis on individualism, so he gets out on what are considered to be really radical policies on abortion, on marijuana, should be being sold in your local A&P. That the contrast there is even greater. So I can see why Rand Paul doesn't want to spend his time having to define his what you called the places of daylight between himself and Dad, because that's going to obviously put him in some defensive positions. Mm-hmm. He's staying away from that. They're traps for him, I think.
Okay, Bruce Gronbeck, let's go back to the phones and get some more reaction from Iowans who were listening to the Rand Paul interview in the first part of this hour. Keith in Iowa Falls, I assume you heard it?
I did. Did indeed. Well, over the past 40 years or so, I suppose the Republican Party has had to have a coalition of economic conservatives, defense hawks, and social conservatives in order to win national elections, and I think that's certainly true here in Iowa. But I think that coalition is fraying badly. On the defense side, I think Americans are tired of war. I think Iowans are tired of war. We want to spend less. We want to be less aggressive on foreign policy. On the social side, I think social conservatism is dying. So I think there's a realization, certainly with Paul, and I think the Republican Party in general, that maybe the one vital area they have of that coalition is still economic conservatism. So they're kind of trying to stress that.
Mm-hmm. And de-emphasize social issues, as we talked about in the interview.
De-emphasize social issues and even, I think, defense spending, aggressive foreign policy, that type of thing is being de-emphasized too. Mm-hmm. I think that's their attempt to build a bigger base. I don't think it's going to be successful.
Okay. Keith in Iowa Falls, thank you for that view. Let's move on. A lot of reaction here. Jerry is in Des Moines. Hi, Jerry. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I was taken by Rand Paul's remarks that the GOP, the Republicans, needed to be a big tent, so to speak, and include a lot of different views. That's just the opposite of what his Tea Party supporters say. I've got a friend who's a Republican state senator at the legislature, and he told me, quite frankly, that he couldn't work with Democrats because if he did, the Tea Party would run a primary race against him and make it impossible for him to win in the general election. So they don't want a big tent. They want their own narrow little bigoted views to prevail, and they're going to take the Republican Party down with them, and Rand Paul will be leading the charge to oblivion.
Jerry, thank you for that from Des Moines. We know there's a lot of reaction out there. Obviously, can't get to all of it in the hour, but thank you for those who did call and for the views that we heard. Interesting Bruce Cronbeck, I wanted to touch on one or two other things before we have to say goodbye on this Politics Wednesday. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie this week admitted that he had lap band surgery. That's a common procedure to help with weight loss. And in speaking to reporters, Christie brushed aside questions about whether this indicates an interest in pursuing the national spotlight and a 2016 presidential run, saying the issues were far more significant than that.
I turned 50 years old, and it made me think. You know, it gave I got confronted with, you know, your own mortality as you start to age.
So Chris Christie has been heavy the entire time he's been serving in office. It doesn't seem to have hurt him politically in New Jersey. So should we read anything into this about his potential presidential run?
I wouldn't read a lot into it. You know, we began to become concerned about health issues and presidents certainly with Eisenhower, his hospitalizations during, and can we put old men, can we put people with health difficulties into office? And then we had the vigorous candidates coming, the athletic candidates coming. You know, and he's not the first candidate to do something about matters of weight. Mike Huckabee, Bill Richardson come to mind as two men who prided themselves on their weight loss as they got ready for the vigorous run you needed to make for the presidency. He's certainly getting his body in shape if he decides he wants to run. And he's certainly able to use the excuse that he's doing this for his family and his own well-being. And he'll pop through this all right unless he loses weight. And then, like many others who've had that kind of surgery, then put it back on.
Right. And we know we could talk a long time about candidates and body image, physical attributes
yep.
that communicate. We have Roosevelt's
right.
polio being hidden in the 1930s. Taft,
deeply hidden, right.
Yes, and Taft being, I think, our largest president, the 27th.
Yes, yes. Although he didn't catch a lot of grief over it. I mean, he goes on for...
He didn't have 24/7 digital media following him around.
Right.
Bruce, I wanted to ask you, we didn't have you on last week, but the correspondents' dinner at the White House happened a few days ago. President Obama used the opportunity to poke fun at the media, its depictions of him and his own political missteps. Comment on this. Here he is talking about how serving as president the past 4 years has aged him.
Look, I get it. These days I look in the mirror and I have to admit, I'm not the strapping young Muslim socialist that I used to be. Time passes. Get a little gray. And yet, even after all this time, I still make rookie mistakes. Like, I'm out in California, we're at a fundraiser, we're having a nice time. I happen to mention that Kamala Harris is the best-looking attorney general in the country. As you might imagine, I got trouble when I got back home. Who knew Eric Holder was so sensitive?
President Obama at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Bruce, quickly, what does seeing a president or another prominent political figure poke fun at themselves do for that image? We like that, don't we?
We do like that. It's a sense that they are human, even though we've spent a lot of time convincing ourselves that they are elevated to a position of being all wise, all moral, and all smart. They must be to have that job. I think the other thing that you heard in those is the use of humor to make points about people who are giving you a bad time or people who have in some way disappointed you. But you can always say, but it's only a joke. And yet you get out political points, kind of in the tradition of the king's jester,
mm-hmm.
or or the old classic carnival from the Middle Ages, where there was reversal of roles for a couple days to let off steam and let everybody enjoy all that and then get back to your repressive government.
Here's another clip, Bruce, before we have to go. The headline comic talent for that evening was, of course, Conan O'Brien. Reviews of his speech said he went easy on the president but skewered the media. Here's a sampling from that speech about the media.
But as I look around the room and see all the media here tonight, I realize this is all just one big high school cafeteria. That's all it is. Think about it. Fox is the jocks. MSNBC is the nerds. Bloggers are the goths. NPR is the table for kids with peanut allergies. Al Jazeera is the weird foreign exchange student nobody talks to. And print media, I didn't forget you. You're the poor kid who died sophomore year in a car crash. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Cheer up. We dedicate the yearbook to you.
Conan O'Brien at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. We don't have much time. If you've got a comment there that fits in 20 seconds, Bruce, on our way out.
Yeah, while the president took his pokes at the media, O'Brien, of course, is not beholden to them at all. And he did. Most of that speech was ripping at them even harder than Stephen Colbert did a few years ago. And that got him a lot of negative commentary. But it really was fun, especially his assault on Fox and CNN.
You are a lot of fun and insightful. Bruce Gronbeck, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it a lot. Thanks.
Emeritus Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Iowa, Bruce Gronbeck. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks so much for joining us.